idea of what you have been involved with?
Well, I'm a member of parliament.
Okay.
My name is Mangosuthu Buthelezi, and I lead my party in parliament. I've been in this parliament since 1994, when the democratic era began, and I've always been involved in politics before 94. And in 94, during the first election, my party was able to win with a clear majority the province of KwaZulu-Natal. We also got more votes in 1999, although less than before, but we lost control of the province in 2004. But I continue to lead my party in the legislature and in the parliament of the Republic of South Africa.
Okay, excellent. Obviously, your career has been spanned many years, and you've done many different things and been involved in many different areas of the South African political sphere.
Yes.
Today, I was wondering if we could talk mainly about the negotiation period in the early 90s.
Mm.
And I have a few questions for you from that time.
Yes.
And the first question I'd like to ask is, we have this major event in which then-President F.W. de Klerk unbans the ANC, the SACP, and some other political parties. At this time, as the leader of Inkatha, what do you see as the priorities and challenges of facing you and facing your movement?
Well, I don't think that our priorities have changed, because we have always believed in federal form of state for South Africa, and in fact, the fact that we have even this poor imitation of a federal state was actually the contribution of my party, because the ANC didn't want it. And this is proven, because even now the ANC is trying to dismantle, is debating whether provinces should be dismantled even now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is of great concern to me, because I believe in federal system in subsidiarity,
mm-hmm.
and I believe in people in regional regions to having, you know, authority to determine their own matters. I don't believe in centralism. So that is of great concern to me.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before we started recording, you've been a proponent of the federal idea and of federalism for decades now.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was wondering, in what ways do you believe federalism is particularly suitable for South Africa, and why have you fought so fiercely to see it realized?
Because I've always admired all the federal states in the world, I think, whether it's the United States, whether it's India, whether it's Canada, whether it's Germany. I've always thought that form of government is the best for us, for this country, for our people, for people in various, especially in a country which is multi-ethnic like ours, is very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the interests of the people of the Western Cape, for instance, may not tally on all fours with the interests of the people of Gauteng or KwaZulu-Natal.
Mm-hmm.
And I therefore believe that it's in the interest, you know, of people everywhere to have autonomy and to be able to determine matters. Some self-determination at that level, I think, is of great importance, especially even in delivery also. I believe that people would deliver better in a federal form of state than being, you know, looking up somewhere to Pretoria, far away, instead of doing most of the things, and only major things like foreign affairs controlled by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. At the other end of the spectrum, in the early 90s, the ANC initially favoured a very strong unitary state. What were your concerns about such a model for post-apartheid South Africa?
Unitary state?
A unitary state, a strong centralised state.
Yes.
What were your concerns about a state
that would
look like that?
Well, I was concerned because I knew that my colleagues, you know, in the ANC were actually very much influenced by the USSR,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that kind, I didn't imagine that that kind of form of government would be suitable for us in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a federal formula. It gives people more leeway to determine things for themselves and not be dictated to by a central power somewhere, far away from where they are.
Mm-hmm. Did you have concerns about minority rights and minority representation?
Yes, that's why I said in the beginning that we're a diverse country, we're multi-ethnic,
mm-hmm.
and even for that reason, I thought it was in the best interest of the people of this country if we have a federal form
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
of government.
Okay. One thing that I was quite interested in speaking to you about is that when one looks back during the negotiation period and reads a lot of the debates and a lot of what was written, at times people seem to use you, Principal Telezi, the IFP, Inkatha, the KwaZulu government, the Zulu monarchy and the Zulu people almost interchangeably. And I was wondering if you could talk about the difficulty of advocating a particular policy when perhaps people did not quite understand what groups you were representing or what points you were actually trying to advocate.
From the beginning of negotiations, the king was not represented mm-hmm. in the negotiations. And I felt that that was not fair because when we were conquered in 1879 by the British, we were a sovereign state, with a monarchy. So we were concerned as IFP about the place of the monarchy as an institution in the new political dispensation. And this was an issue which almost cost us our very existence because we almost didn't go to elections because the ANC would not want to commit themselves. It was not until, of course, Professor Okumu was able to talk to Mr. de Klerk, to Mr. Mandela, and myself. And then on the 19th of April 1994, only then was there an agreement that this issue of the place of the monarchy would be dealt with as soon as possible after the elections through international mediation. Because we had actually asked international mediators to come from Germany, from Britain, people like Dr. Kissinger, people like Lord Carrington and the former Chief Justice of India and so on. They had come here, but the ANC, through Mr. Ramaphosa and Mr. Ruth Mayor, they wrecked it. So that's, it was only after that that we decided we're not going to participate in the election. And until this academic from Kenya, Professor Washington Okumu, mm-hmm. intervened, we were not participating in the election.
Mm-hmm.
So we only participated in the election then, and we also insisted that Parliament should be called for one day to enshrine the institution of the monarchy in the constitution, which in fact was done in the interim constitution. It was enshrined.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they finalized the constitution, it was no longer there. And they said that it would be sorted out through a constitution for the province of KwaZulu-Natal, which constitution for the province of KwaZulu-Natal has never taken place up to now.
Mm.
So I always pity, because I think the king somehow was able to be, they were able to pull the wool over the king's eyes because that matter has not been sorted out. But instead, the province passed legislation, Act 5 of 2005, which has got a line, Section 17, saying that Isilo, which is the king, is the monarch of the province, which, of course, in constitutional terms is meaningless,
mm.
because that should have been done through a constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that the guarantees that were made to you that enabled you to re-enter the process and to contest in the elections have not been met?
Were dishonored. The agreement was dishonored.
Mm.
It was not honored by Mr. Mandela. I know that Mr. Clegg tried very hard to try to persuade Mr. Mandela carry out the agreement,
mm-hmm.
but he resisted.
Mm.
So for me, it's one of the bad records that Mr. Mandela has, myself, of dishonoring an agreement.
Mm. Mm. So looking back, do you, and knowing how things have turned out, do you regret joining the participating in the elections and rejoining the process?
Well, I cannot regret the opportunity to work for my people as I do within a democratic dispensation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to say that I regret. Of course, I feel very bitter about the fact that we actually let down a progress path by the ANC, and particularly Mr. Mandela,
mm-hmm.
and that he would not honor his own signatures.
Mm-hmm. I see. I see. I wanted to ask you a slightly different question. Now, your leadership of KwaZulu was very different from that of other homelands. I mean, you resisted attempts to foist independence on KwaZulu.
Right.
And some have suggested that your participation in the homeland system was tactical, to work for change from sort of within a system, and that your leadership was very different from that of the other homeland areas. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
I think one must understand in the first place that I'm a hereditary leader of my people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a traditional leader by birth. And therefore, my taking over my position as my father's heir over the Buthelezi clan in the district of Mahlabathini within the Zulu kingdom was something that I was born to do.
Mm-hmm.
So within that, I always say the whole thing was imposed on the Zulu people anyway. It was not by choice that I participated. In fact, the fact that Inkosi Albert Luthuli and Mr. Oliver Tambo had to speak to my late sister, Princess Mojina, in Benoni, requesting her to plead with me that if the people elected me within the framework of this system which the apartheid regime was imposing on us, I should not refuse, because they knew that I rejected it. So it was under those circumstances that I was actually there by birth in the first place, and this thing was imposed. Mm-hmm. And then the leaders of the ANC said that I must take it over rather than that anyone else should take over the leadership of it. So therefore, I moved then this thing to not where the apartheid regime wanted me to move it, to independence. And I worked against to protect the citizenship of not only the Zulu people but of South Africans, because we being the largest ethnic group in South Africa, probably if we had agreed, there would be the homeland system would have succeeded.
Mm.
And in fact, Mr. de Klerk at the TRC admitted as much. He said that what made them abandon grandiose apartheid was the fact that we rejected this. We rejected independence.
Mm-hmm. I see. The question I had for you is that you have a very strong, and have always had a very strong regional support base in KwaZulu-Natal.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you were always advocating ideas at a national level.
Absolutely.
Absolutely,
because I grew up as a member of the ANC Youth League,
mm-hmm.
and the founders of the ANC were actually, one must understand, people were very close to me, because even the founder, Dr. Pixley Seme, was married to my mother's eldest sister, daughter of the king too. So those are people I knew as I grew up. They were not legends. So and the very first president of the ANC was Dr. Dube. He came from our region too. He was a Zulu from a place near Durban,
mm-hmm.
and many others after that. So I'd grown up in that environment where one looked beyond just the region of KwaZulu-Natal when we looked at South Africa. After all, my great-grandfather, the King Cetshwayo himself, after he was his regiments were vanquished in Ulundi, and he was exiled. He was a prisoner here in the castle here in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm. So you've always been very conscious of the need to push for things at a national level and to participate at a national level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how did you respond to I guess comments from the ANC and others that you were a regional actor, that your interests were at a regional level? How did you try and address the issue?
That suited them. That suited them in the attempt to vilify and denigrate me. Mm-hmm. Because I could not have worked, if I was like that, I could not have worked with people like Mr. Tambo until 1979, mm-hmm. if that was the case. Because I worked with Mr. Tambo private and for all these years until 1979, when I refused to take up the armed struggle and when I refused to support sanctions and disinvestment against South Africa. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that accusation is merely part of the vilification of me, because in fact even before I used to come here to Cape Town, I used to address, you know, thousands of people here in Langa, here in Cape Town. Yeah. I had what they call rallies in Soweto, you know, I used to go to Bloemfontein, I was, you know, holding rallies all over South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I mean, to confine me like that, it's just done by those, the ANC, when they turned against me, when I refused to take up the armed struggle, and I recall, if you read a recently published book by Anthea Jeffrey, mm-hmm. The People's War, mm-hmm. then you'll understand the whole thing, because what happened, you know, why the media, the churches, and all of them, you know, joined hands together to vilify me, and to actually, even when the violence took place in that low-intensity civil war, mm-hmm. they made it as if, you know, I was driving the violence, whereas, in fact, I didn't have even an army. They had an army in Mkhonto overseas themselves that they used, and they threatened, right through negotiations, Mr. Mandela used this army of theirs as a sort of Democles right through, because right through, he kept on saying he was not going to just, you know, demobilize it. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was just something that they did themselves.
I see.
I mean, for instance, now, Dave yesterday, the president here in Parliament, maybe you can get a text of what he said. He mentioned me in his State of the Nation address as one of the people who were responsible for the release of Mandela, other prisoners, and so on. And even yesterday, the chief whip of the ANC repeated it. I think that deals with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to talk too much more on this particular topic, because I understand it's bringing up things that happened a while ago, but it would be helpful for me, and one of the things I've been sort of battling to understand is why the ANC changed their attitude towards you so swiftly and so determinedly from the early days when they were very supportive of you.
No, but I think I've already said that. I've already said that we had a meeting with Mr. Tambo in London.
Yeah.
He requested me. We had met abroad in various places. We had met in Stockholm, we had met in London, we had met in Nairobi, we had met in Malawi, we had met in Nigeria. But in 1979, he asked me to come to London with a delegation, mm-hmm. and he was going to come with the delegation of the ANC. And for 2.5 days, we discussed this issue of disinvestment and, mm-hmm. and sanctions, and secondly, the armed struggle. He was trying to persuade us to embrace that. Mind you, even before that, Mr. Tambo was attacked for being very close to me. Mm. Because even the first 12 of who hived off the ANC, mm-hmm. they stated as one of their reasons for breaking away from the ANC the fact that Mr. Tambo was too close to me.
Mm. Really?
The reason they stated in black and white.
I see.
So when I refused them to embrace their strategies, then the sluice gates, you might say, were opened, and they attacked me through all their international, you know, friends, mm-hmm. and channels, and also vilified me and so on, called me all sorts of names.
And in not supporting sanctions, you were joined by some very high-profile people here in South Africa, such as Helen Suzman and
Alan Paton.
Alan Paton. I mean, these were people who shared your views.
Quite so. But what about themselves now? In fact, I said it just last week when we met with Mr. Zuma. He invited leaders of opposition parties. And I said to them that I found it interesting that they say sanctions should not be imposed on Zimbabwe for the same reason that I stated about not imposing them here. And he laughed, yes.
He laughed?
Yes.
I see, sure. So you definitely, there was other support for your ideas and then people who were thinking that.
It. Yeah. And in fact, I tested this in a because I used to go, hold even here in Lang, I remember, I used to ask people whether they support sanctions and they would roar and say, no, we need jobs. I had rallies in Durban and in Soweto, where I actually asked the people themselves, you know, to do so. And I would argue, of course, that people, if you go to any factory in South Africa, you know, any place where people are employed, you'll find queues and queues of people. And I say by doing so, they vote with their feet for continued investment and against sanctions.
Do you feel that perhaps you had a better view of the situation on the ground operating as a leader within South Africa as opposed to how the ANC was operating at the time, which was largely in exile?
Quite.
Do you feel you were quite in touch with what, as you say, the people on the street, the common people,
quite correct.
Felt?
Absolutely. Those are the facts of the matter, whether one likes it or not. I think that's why, for instance, at one time, the Bergstrasse Institute at the University of Freiburg University did an empirical survey where I was South Africa's political figure. I was the person who had support more than leaders, even those that were in jail.
I see.
It's because of that.
Excellent. I'd like to change tracks a little bit and ask you if you could tell me a little bit about your hopes and perhaps ambitions for the KZN Indaba that was held, I believe, in 1984. Because a number of people I've spoken to have suggested that that was a really overlooked model, like you were really trying, you were ahead of your time in what you were trying to do there and the types of solutions you were proposing.
In fact, I think that thing, I thought I was going to mention it myself, because I think that also deals with the issue, you know, of the issue that I was an ethnic leader and so on. Because, in fact, I mobilized people of all races in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And the last result of that was that, of course, the Joint Executive Authority, the KwaZulu-Natal Joint Executive Authority, which was the first non-racial government of any sort in this country. It was the first time that people of all races in the province were governed that province together. And that was before 94, long before 94.
It really was, yeah. But in terms of the reception of your proposals, were you disappointed that people did not look at it more closely and see how it could be emulated?
In fact, there are many people who admired it, but of course, I think we're overtaken by other events. I mean, they were, for instance, disappointed that the ruling party in South Africa, the National Party, would not be part of it. And also the ANC, I had invited the ANC to participate also. They refused to participate. That I was disappointed. But nevertheless, we proceeded with other organizations and various structures. And resulting in that joint executive authority.
I see. Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that we have a poor imitation of the type of federalism that you were proposing and that you wanted for South Africa.
Right.
And I wonder if you could talk about how the reality today just does not meet the ambitions that you had or what you were really proposing.
No, I mean in terms of this constitution. I find that provinces don't pass, while they have the competence, they don't pass their own legislation somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think this is largely the case because most of the provinces are ANC, are governed by the ANC. Mm-hmm. And I find that while in the constitution there's concurrency and there's also some laws, some things that we can do as various provinces, it has never taken off. It's just not done because this government here doesn't like it, and because of what I've said, that most of the provinces are under them anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They look askance at that.
So do you think there is a way of rectifying it? Do you think there's a solution to try and make the provinces more autonomous, I guess?
I think that it would be, for instance, this province is governed by the DA, perhaps mm-hmm. they can do such things here, just as before we lost power in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, there are things we could do, mm-hmm. and which we did, which cannot be done now because it's now under the ANC, and the ANC is now put on the agenda. It's not theory or what they speak about privately. It just been put on the table whether provinces should continue to exist or not. That's the point we've reached now.
I see. And I know one of the sort of best examples of the potential for provinces was when KwaZulu-Natal began administering nivaropine, and antiretroviral drugs, ahead of the national government, and actually intervened in that landmark case. So would you say that represents the potential for provinces?
This stands out as mm-hmm. an example of what could happen, because we save lives of people mm-hmm. because of the autonomy which the provinces had.
I see. But despite the provinces not functioning perhaps as well as they could or as well as you envisaged, do you still feel that your contributions to the shape of the South African state, which were, you know, significant, I mean, in the fact that there even are these provinces that have some powers, I mean, well, so I mean, the provinces, the shape of the provinces today,
yes.
and the shape of the relationship between the central government and yes. the provinces could largely be said to the advocacy of you and Nkata and some other parties who are pushing for federalism.
Quite.
And so do you feel, are there any particular aspects of this that you're quite proud of, that you were able to at least achieve part of what you were aiming for?
No, I think it's already mentioned. I think the case of nivaropine stands out. Yes.
It stands out as the most successful example.
Yes, quite. It's a good example.
Okay. I see. So we've talked a little bit about your rejoining of the elections, which was one thing that I was quite interested to hear more about. But we spoke about how Mr. Washington Nkobo was able to sort of mediate a bit there.
Quite.
But up until that point, it really did seem as if you could have not participated in the elections and the outcome would have been quite... I'm just quite interested to learn about your thinking at the time, because had you not participated in the elections, you could have missed out on this very landmark, significant event in South African history. And were you prepared to really go through and not participate at all until your demands were met?
We had decided.
Yeah?
It was fair calmly, it was decided that we're not going to participate until the intervention of Professor Kum.
Yeah.
We had decided, it's not as if we're just thinking of, we had decided we're not going to participate. Mm-hmm. And the people were very happy when I announced on my return. I remember there were thousands of people in the lounge waiting for me. And I said that we now can participate. Mm-hmm. They were very happy.
I see.
Because they knew that our stand was actually a stand which could cause the obliteration of our party too.
Yeah. Mm. And that was a risk you were willing to take on principle.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. But now, on election day, you weren't 100% happy with how the elections were run in KwaZulu-Natal.
Yes.
And actually got the IEC to extend the elections for a day, if my understanding is correct. And I was wondering if you could talk about the problems on during that time. And
see, there was violence at that time, although it was a bit suspended during that time. I mean, during those days, the days of the election, there was not many incidents of violence. But at the same time, you know, boxes with votes were ferried from various points to a central place, and quite a big number of votes were thrown all over the place, and they were found, you know, in valleys and hills where they were thrown away by people who were influenced by the ANC, you know, so.
I see. But you accepted the IEC's contention that the results needed to be accepted for the case of peace?
It was just for the sake of peace, yes.
Yeah.
But we complained about it. Each time, there's not been a single election in South Africa that has taken place where there's no fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that the IEC always says that, you know, in terms of the regulations, we should have complained at certain time. Not now, it's too late and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the last year's election, there were a case where in the province, the office of the premier was printing ballots, and we actually drew the attention of the IEC, and I even told President Obasanjo of Nigeria, who was an African Union monitor, but that was never attended to.
I see.
And other things too, which are too numerous to mention.
And just on this issue of the violence, I mean, you've mentioned a few times, but there was certainly seems to have been an effort to cast you as having some role in the violence.
That is why I say, really, I cannot go into that. But
yeah.
If you buy the copy of the book, which
is the best
just a few months ago published, you know, The People's War, then you'll understand it is. Rather than me arguing for myself for Princeton University, because I don't know the amount of propaganda and lies that were flung at me and the IFP, which are not true. I mean, the whole international community ignored the fact that the ANC had an army. I had no army.
Mm-hmm.
They had this army, which killed a lot of our people.
Hmm.
And our people defended themselves. And I that's all I asked them to do. I believe in nonviolence, but I said it was an inalienable right of citizens under our common law to defend themselves and their loved ones. That's all I said. And then at one time they wanted to assassinate, I mean, many times, wanted to assassinate me and those who worked with me in the cabinet.
Hmm.
And then since I rejected independence, we had no army in KwaZulu-Natal. Transkei, Phuthatswana, Venda, Ciskei had armies, but I didn't have an army. And because of that, I appealed to the central government for people to protect myself and my colleagues and the buildings and so on. And there were those 200 young people that were actually trained by the Defense Force for us. Because I was a sovereign citizen, I was entitled to protection by the sovereign government. There was nothing hanky-panky about it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they always used that as if it was a deliberate thing of training hit squads,
right.
Which, of course, is nonsense. The fact that one or two people there were involved in that does not mean that they were not orchestrated by myself to do so. Mm-hmm. Just as they say some members of the KwaZulu police were involved in acts of violence.
Yeah.
That was not orchestrated by me. There was not a single meeting of the Central Committee of the IFP which ever decided that we should kill anybody or embark on a war, except the self-protection units which we tried to set up just before the election, because the ANC had self-defense units, and we have self-protection units, you know, because of that civil war, to protect people that were being mowed down. I mean, up to now, we've not been told what happened to more than 400 leaders of the IFP that were killed.
Yeah.
They've never told us, even now, who killed them, let alone thousands of others who died.
I see. But given all of this, this just tragic events and this unpleasantness, how did you feel about then participating in the government after the elections as Minister of Home Affairs, given that there were these demands that had been met and numerous unresolved issues that you say you feel quite bitter about, and understandably so? How did you then go on to just to participate and work towards...
The Constitution said so. The interim Constitution prescribed that any party that had more than 5% was entitled, it was not through magnanimity or a favour, should participate in the government.
Yeah. So
in the government of national unity. I mean, how could I be the one who wrecks what is called the government of national unity? Because then they would say that, you see, true to my character, I'm sabotaging something that is meant to promote national unity.
I see. Okay, let's talk a bit more about the federalism issue, if that's all right. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you formed a group called COSAG, that was COSAG, the Concerned South Africans group, who were proponents of federalism.
Yes.
And it entailed getting together some fairly disparate groups and people who were envisaging very different things.
Quite so.
And yet you formed a common alliance.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could talk about that and how you went about building up this coalition of people who shared your bigger views.
I don't think there's much I can say there, except that we did create that.
Yeah.
And people who didn't really... We're not on the same wavelength politically, but with this common, what you call, idea of a federal state in South Africa, you know, which we wanted. It is true that it was quite a motley gathering, because some wanted their own states, which are not there, you know, like the Volkstadt idea and so on, which was not what I believed in myself, but that was the reason.
I think it's just it was just quite interesting to look back, because, as you said, it's quite a motley gathering of people who were very, very much not on the same political wavelength. But but I guess all people who felt that the federal model would be
best,
most suitable,
because of the heterogeneous nature of the country, of the population, and the diversity of the people of South Africa, that it would be the best model for peace and stability.
Right. Now, in terms of the IFP and the IFP's ambitions and future, what do you, looking forward, what are your plans for the IFP, and what are your ambitions?
About what?
About where you would like the party to be, perhaps at the next elections, or what are your goals for the party?
Our goals have not changed; they're the same even now.
Yeah.
That if we were in a position to be in power, we'd still pursue the goals that we always believed in.
I see.
Our goals have not changed.
But I mean, would you?
We don't have money. Yeah. Politics is money today. The ANC had 200 million. Budget for the election, we had nothing, you know. They also use the resources of the state, you know, and so on, and they do continue to do so, plus other things that I've mentioned.
Right.
You see, whereas at the time when I advocated, when I stood against sanctions, I was a flavor of the month as far as business is concerned. But now business like to polish the shoes of those who are in power. They don't give us any donations. And money is milk of politics. You cannot do these things without money.
It's very challenging being a smaller party.
But
it's very challenging being a smaller party.
It's very challenging being a smaller party.
In a state that's governed by a party that just has a mass of participation.
Even businesses, you hear that they've even recorded chancellor houses, business with Eskom and so on.
Yeah,
I mean, we're nowhere near them as far as that's concerned.
Hmm. So do you think there are some reforms that are needed that would allow smaller parties more funds and more opportunities to campaign
talk
resources?
About it. Even last week, we were talking with the president about it.
Yeah.
Because what happens is that even the money that comes from the state, they give it proportionally according to the percentage of people that supported during elections. So the lion's share of it always goes to the ANC, and we get tidbits, you know, whatever remains from that. Even that we thought is not fair, especially because ANC, you know, is awash with money and so on.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, I think that sort of brings an end to the questions that I had that I'd wanted to ask you. But do you think there are any things that I should have asked you that I haven't? Or are there any reflections? Well, just in terms of the federalism debate, the demands for regional autonomy, I think we've covered quite a lot of ground.
Nothing else I can add.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm very conscious that you have other demands on your time, so I'd like to thank you very much, Principal Tulezi. No,